Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Steve Asbury, 28 years of career experience, fire chief for Clark County Fire Department in Kentucky. Steve had dreams and intentions to become a police officer, but it was his dad who gave him a nudge and asked him to at least try for the local fire department in their area that was hiring. Steve was a little hesitant, but once he applied, got offered the job, and finished recruit class, the rest was history. One of the things I enjoyed with my conversation with Chief was when he hit on for individuals to try and find the right department that aligns with your interests or beliefs, never settling, and the things he wished he knew before becoming fire chief. With that, I present Mr. Steve Asbury.
Good morning. My name is Steve Asbury. I'm the chief of Clark County Fire Department. I got into the fire service because I actually went to college at Eastern Kentucky University in Richmond, Kentucky, and I studied law enforcement. While studying law enforcement, I was home one weekend and my father was on me about getting a job. He was not so much about me going to college, and he wanted me to get a job. And he says, "Hey, by the way, the fire department is hiring here local in a small town here in Kentucky." And I told him, I said, "Well, that's great, Dad, but I'm not going to school to be a fireman. I'm going to school to be a police officer." He said, "Well, why don't you just give it a shot and see where it goes?" So he knew a couple of the firemen that he was a plumber and he worked with them. It's a real small town. Probably about 6,000-7,000 people live in this town. So everybody knows everybody. And I was able to get a job at the fire department. Went through the door, you know, telling everybody, "Hey, I'm just going to be a fireman for a little bit. I really want to be a police officer." And after I got a recruit class, there was no looking back. There was never another hint. Didn't finish college, didn't finish school, became a fireman. And here I am today, 28 years later, as a career firefighter.
Okay. So with that being said, once you joined the fire service, it was an instant hit, love at first sight. Did you join a volunteer service or did you go right into the career field?
No, it was right into a career field. It was a small department. I think we probably had about 15 career firefighters at the time. It would be categorized as a combination department. We did have part-timers that worked, they didn't work shift work. They only came back on callback for fires or stuff. So we operated with about 5 men per shift for the entire city. Small town called Cynthiana, Kentucky is where I grew up. But it was a career department, and like you said, there was no looking back. You know, probably the first time I was in the military, and that was probably the first time I ate 3 square meals a day, and that just continued with the fire service. You know, it was come in, check your truck, eat breakfast, do a little training, eat lunch, you know, watch television, do a little bit more training, wash the trucks, eat another meal. So it was no looking back. I probably, after my rookie year, I probably gained about 30 pounds being in the fire service.
Okay. All right. So with that being said, when you joined the fire service, I always like to ask the guests, was there a group or an individual that you aspire to act like and be like?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, without going way off into the weeds right now, you know, the fire service has changed over my career dramatically. When I first joined, it was truly a lot of the older guys, and they would take the rookies under their wing, and they would teach them absolutely everything that they knew about the fire service. It was always a constant learning process. And it wasn't so much just learning about the fire department. It was learning about real world life in general. And that's what I loved about, that's what drew me in so much. I mean, back when I was a rookie back in 96, a lot of firemen had other jobs. I think my starting salary was $4.25 an hour. That was the starting pay. So, big difference to now. But back then you had to have another job, and they would look at you and they'd say, "Steve, it's a great job, greatest job in the world. You only work one day and you're off too. You have to go out and find you another job though to supplement your income. You're not going to make it by going home and sitting on your tail." Sorry about that.
You're
I've
good.
got automatic sensor lights.
It's fine.
They said you're not going to make it sitting on your tail on your 2 days off at home. So, took that. I was like, "No, we can make it." And my wife, I was raising two kids at the time, and quickly found out that no, I wasn't going to make it. So, they taught you everything you needed to know about the fire service, and then on the days off, I worked with those guys as well. We built houses. We did a number of odd jobs. You name it. We had plumbers, carpenters, electricians. So my father being a plumber, I kind of fell into the plumbing category on my days off. So I'd go with those guys, build houses, and do a little bit of plumbing work for them as well. So, that's the difference between today and now. I think we're actually starting to do that again, because I'm starting to see, as the fire chief in my department, that the younger men that come into the fire service don't have those skills or those traits. If I'm going way too far off, just
No,
stop me
you're
if
good.
that's it. But I'll give you a for instance. I had a young man that one of my rookies, he sent me a video, and I watched the video, and it was him using a drill and a skill saw. So I watched the video and I texted back to him. I was like, "I'm sorry, what am I watching? I missed it. Did you cut your finger off? Did you cut your hand off? That's what I'm concerned with." And he's like, "No, that's me, Chief. I use that drill and that saw." And I was like, "Okay." And he goes, "I've never used one before." And I was like, "Wow," right there. It kind of a realistic moment, that set in for me, was we've got to teach these young firefighters, more than just the fire service. We have to go back to the way it was when I was a rookie, and some of the things that I picked up on, we need to be teaching those young men those exact same things.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, it's one of those things where we shouldn't make fun of an individual for not knowing how to start a saw, use a drill. Instead of laughing at them, we should take them in and show them the way we were, because that was the way it was for me. I never used a saw in my life, but once I got into the volunteer side, I was shown how to do it. And the
Right.
only way to continue that tradition is to pay it forward.
We kind of changed our training perspective around that too. So I was a captain, and I had a young man on my truck with me, and he, I said, "We're gonna go out here, we're gonna train on how to breach walls. But first, we're gonna build the wall." So we went to Lowe's, got the material, came back to the fire station. And I was like, "All right, build me an 8 by, build me an 8 foot tall, 10 foot wide wall, so we can learn how to breach it." And pulled the tape measure out, and he was like, "All right, we need to cut a board, 8 feet and two and a quarter inches." And he was like, "Well, where's the quarter at?" And I'm like, "Yeah, what do you mean?" He said, "Yeah, I got four tick marks." And I was like, no, we need to go. So we need to begin from the basics." So building and construction went along with wall breaching, just because we had to learn to how to use a saw, how to read a tape measure. Studs are 16 inch on center in normal construction. It just goes so deep. Things that I learned when I began, we just went straight to a wall because I know those things. They're like, how far are the studs apart? 16 inches. Nowadays, we have to teach those parts of it. We have to get really intricate with They're very detail oriented with the training.
No, you're right. You're right. Okay. All right. So, with that being said, I'm assuming, which I don't know. So, how was your first year experience as a career firefighter? Was it everything you thought it would be?
Really, it was everything I thought it would be because I had no expectations of the fire service. Never even thought about being a fireman. It was always wanted to be a police officer. So the first year was just it was fantastic. It was really proud of my accomplishment just to become a firefighter because I was in the National Guard as well. So I was proud of my military service, but I was extremely proud to be a firefighter. So it was the first year was, I can say it was absolutely everything I expected because I didn't expect any, didn't know what to expect from being a firefighter.
Okay. And how long did it take you to start climbing the ranks there? And what was it one of those things that you had encouragement, like, hey, Steve, we think you should promote, or was that something you had internally?
Actually, so I didn't promote with that department at all. I just stayed as an engineer. After 9/11, I went full-time military after 9/11. I felt that sense of need to go to serve my country. I was doing it in a guard capacity, National Guard capacity, but went active duty. Spent some time active duty with the Army and then got back into the fire service. So I didn't promote in that department. And then after I left that department and got back into the fire service, I went to another small department in a neighboring county and tried to, didn't get promoted there and then moved for pay purposes to another city department. And, didn't promote there either. So came to a didn't have a real good career there with that department. Didn't not bad mouthing, but it just wasn't a good fit for me. So I
Right.
moved to the current department I'm with, and I was lucky enough to get promoted here in this department.
Okay. And with you touching on that, it's kind of one of those topics. You always, I'm sure you've heard that phrase, the grass isn't always greener wherever
Oh,
you
that's
go
absolutely true.
on the other side. But what advice would you give to someone who's either contemplating leaving their current department for another department or someone who's kind of on the fence? Because you've experienced it.
Oh, absolutely. I could tell you, everybody needs to find the department that fits them. If you are an aggressive or want to be progressive, you need to find that department that, and trust that in their men that want that for their people. If you go to a stagnant department, you'll become stagnant as well. So if you want to progress in your career and learn everything there is to know about the fire service, which you'll never do, but you have to find that department that embraces that mentality. So for anybody that is looking to switch departments, always consider, pay is the big one. Me as the chief right now, I struggle with this. I do not pay as much as some of the surrounding departments. But what I try to do is make up for it in the aspect that we're very progressive. I pay for training. I send guys to training. We do in-house training. But anytime they come to me and say, Chief, there's a class, somewhere in the state that they want to go to, whether it be a swift water rescue class or confined space training, you name it. I'll send them, I'll pay them, and I'll let them off to do it. Something here in Kentucky I found with some of the neighboring departments that they don't always encourage that. And they make guys use their vacation time to go to attend outside training. And that's one way I make up for the shortfall of maybe not paying as much as other departments by sending them to that training. You spark the interest and you want them to go out there and do that. And they'll stick with you. And being an aggressive or progressive department, that's how I kind of keep my men here and keep them from going elsewhere. Now, some of the departments that pay really large sums of money, you're not going to keep those guys no matter how progressive you become. If they can double their salary and do the same job, I can't blame them for that.
Right. Which leads me to ask you a question, because the fire service tends to have a false pretense that, well, the chief doesn't fight for us on pay. Like, what are your limitations when it comes to that? That is something that's above you, that decision is made, correct? I just
That
want
is correct.
that way I just want the listeners to hear it from an actual fire chief.
Right. I do not set the pay for my department. So we have a county judge executive that is the highest ranking authority that is voted on by the tact by the voters in our county. And then we have a fiscal court. So that is the governing body that governs over me as the fire chief. So I have to go to them and ask for raises and setting of salaries and things like that. So no, it's not me. Trust me, we would all make the same pay as the fire chief did if that was the case, because I'd never have any retention or recruiting problems if it was that easy. But no, I have to go and I have to fight on a regular basis. I shouldn't say fight. I work well with most of my fiscal court, and they understand, some of the shortcomings of the pay in the fire service, and they try to keep me competitive as possible. Right now, I'm doing a pretty good job of retention and recruitment, but I feel like I'm more of a recruiter right now, and I'm not being able to retain because of the pay. So I have to educate those elected officials on what they want to invest their money. And they're like, they're sorry about that. So I must be holding really still today. But I have to explain to them. And they say, Chief, what do you mean? Where do we want to invest our money? And I was like, well, if you I'm spending a lot of money on training a new firefighter. I put a lot of money into their training, and we do have an agreement, a work agreement, that they'll stay with our department for X number of years, and it's only 2 years, or they'd have to pay some of that training because what I was doing is I'll train a good recruit. The following, the department next door is Lexington, Kentucky, largest department. It's next county over. We border Fayette County. So largest department in the state of Kentucky. And it's this way across the entire state. So when they see an applicant that has Clark County on there with some experience, not saying they're a shoo-in, but I know the chief, and he's like, hey, you're doing great things over there. So they kind of take my people from me because they know they're being well trained. And that's what I explained to the elected official, is that if you don't want to lose those people and lose your investment in the training process, you have to pay them on the back end. So now we have to lift the pay on the back end to try to keep or retain some of those persons for leaving for more money, because they're very valuable, sought after. I have a man that comes in. He's already certified. He has various technical rescue certifications. Other departments that pay $70,000, $80,000 versus my 45, it is going to swipe them up in a heartbeat. So they understand it's been really tough, but I've done a pretty good job explaining to those elected officials where their money is going. Not only that, benefits is a big thing nowadays. So I got a lot of single young men, and those single young men, being strapping firemen, will become married young men eventually, and along with married young men becomes a family. And right now we pay health insurance for the employees 100% paid, dental, vision, life, you name it, but it's not that way for a family plan. So the family plan costs money. So that comes out of their check. Now they're looking, if they start a family, they're not going to have as much salary as what they're used to being a single person. So that's some of the challenges. So back to your question, yes, the fire chief does not set the salary. I wish I did, because I'd make everybody virtually the same, and we'd never have any issues with hiring another person.
Right.
So, elected officials are the one that sets the salary for fire departments in your community.
Okay. With that being said, for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Clark County, the size, how many stations, amount of personnel, things of that nature?
Sure. So, Clark County is east of Fayette County, and it's in the heart of the bluegrass in the state of Kentucky. We have 37,000 people that live in our county. 18, or excuse me, 19,000 of those live within the city of Winchester. So we actually have two paid departments within our county. We have the county fire department and the city fire department. So we cover 256 square miles is how big our county is. We have three fire stations. We now have three fire stations. We just closed last Friday on the current station I'm sitting in. So we are building our department.
Okay.
We have went from about 5 to 6 employees on a shift to 10 now. So we've virtually doubled the size of our department. We got brand new apparatus. We're doing real good as far as that's concerned. We used to drive when I first joined this department, we had commercial cab trucks, and now we have all custom cabs. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it took a long time to get people to understand that a custom cab truck is actually better for a rural environment because they have tighter turning radiuses now. And small country roads, they handle a little bit better. So we've got new equipment. We've really built our department in the last 4 to 5 years.
So you have three, you cover 256 square miles with three stations.
That is correct. Yeah.
That's
So
a lot.
the city fire department is a little bit larger department. They have roughly 16 people on shift, and we have 10. So we have 26 total, but they cover the city, we cover the county, and if need be, they'll respond mutual aid with us. So we do a pretty good job of covering one another.
Okay.
It's those are the challenges to being in a rural community. We have to do with what we got. So yeah, we cover 256 square miles with 10 personnel on duty.
Okay. And if I'm getting this correct, the city and the county, are they one agency?
No, they are not. They're two
Are they?
separate agencies.
Got
Yes.
you. Got you. But you guys work together.
We work together. Yes.
Okay. All right. Understood. Understood. What's your minimum staffing across your apparatus?
So, when we're fully staffed at 10, we're at 8 minimum staffing. So, that is that it's always another issue in our department. I've had guys be like, Chief, let's work with a little bit less, so more people can take vacation at one time. And what I've tried to explain to my department is for me to go to the elected officials and make the argument that we need more personnel on duty, I have to raise minimum staffing. And
Right.
they're like, well, now that we got 10 people, we should be able to. They were used to working down to 5 people. We only had 5, 6 people on a shift anyway. So now that we're staffing up to 10, they don't understand why minimum staffing has to accommodate or coincide with the maximum staffing. So getting your men to see that has become challenging as well. I was like, hey guys, if we move to 10 personnel, then the minimum staffing comes from 7 to 8. And then if we increase to 11 or 12, then the minimum staffing's going to go up higher.
Okay.
So that's one of the challenges right now. So right now we're at 9 persons per shift until we get some of our recruits have training. You get them staffing truck. So then it'll go back up from 7 to 8. So
Okay. And are your personnel EMT basics or the paramedic level?
we have a mixture of both. So
Okay.
at a minimum, we are EMT basic, but we do have paramedics that are actually are on our trucks as well. We run EMS calls, but the city fire department runs the ambulance service. So their department runs EMS for the entire county, and we respond with them out in the county to augment or supplement the EMS.
Okay, so your department does not handle transport.
We do not handle transport.
Okay.
That's actually a set. That's one of my selling points, actually, to you get that paramedic that's been on that buggy for a long time, and I give them that job on that engine sitting out there. I said, look, you still get to use your skills, you still get to help the community, but you don't have to transport. So,
Right.
you got to be creative. So that's how I, handle that situation. That's how I have some paramedics.
Okay. And what is your rank structure like?
So, on the staff side, I have a training officer, which is a major, a fire marshal, which is a major, and then an assistant chief. And then myself as the chief. On the day-to-day operations, the line side, I have a battalion chief who runs day-to-day operations. We have a captain underneath him, and then I have two lieutenants. So that way I have an officer on every apparatus. The captain is a little different from the lieutenants in the aspect that if the battalion chief is off duty, he does have the ability to run the shift.
Okay.
I don't let lieutenants run shift yet. I'm trying to get them more accustomed to being a company officer. So that captain is a step above them, and that's the way we work it. Some people have neighboring departments have captains as opposed to battalion chiefs, but the battalion chief is the one that runs the shift, and then the captains and lieutenants answer to him unless the battalion chief's off and that captain steps in that role.
Okay, understood. All right. So we're gonna fast forward a little bit. You're on your current department now, Clark County. At what point did you decide to start moving up the ranks and why?
So when I moved to this department, fell in love with it, the camaraderie. It was a really good department, and it was a small department, but a lot of people had a lot of plans for this department, and it was just always, it seemed like it was always a struggle. We always had plans in place to better the department, but the financial backing all wasn't always there. It wasn't available. Not saying that the elected officials didn't want to do those things. You're bound to a budget. You can only do what the budget allows you to do. But thankfully, the county has grown, so the budget has grown a little bit. And so I've retired. I retired in 2020, and I retired as a captain. Never made it to battalion chief.
Okay.
So I became a lieutenant and loved being a company officer. Made it to captain. I liked being captain the most of all in this department because every now and then I got that chance to run the shift and show my potential and really like that part of it. But I was still a company officer. We got that structure fire. I was going to be interior attack most of the time as the captain or lieutenant. And that's what I really liked about becoming a company officer. It was the fact that I didn't have to be in charge of everything, but I had enough responsibility that I got to be interior or handle most of the rescue, be operations. That was my love and passion for the job. So that's how, I became a captain. I never did get to be a battalion chief. Really had no aspirations or desires to be the battalion chief. I liked where I was at. And I retired in 2020, and right after I retired, it just so happens that the chief of the department at the time retired at the same time I did. And some of the guys on our department asked, "Hey, why don't you be the chief?" And I was like, "Oh, I never really thought about being the chief." Just give it a little bit more thought and time. And I thought, what's it gonna hurt to apply? Sure, I'll apply. And was lucky enough to become the chief. And very thankful I did. I got an opportunity to grow the department that I had always envisioned, or how our department, our previous chiefs, I felt like I picked up the torch. I get a lot of credit for some of the things that we have done within our department. And I always try to make sure that I tell them that it was always on the backs of the men that came before me. It wasn't something that I invented or came up with. These plans were already in the works. I was just the one lucky enough to get to see them through. So I try to make sure the retirees that retired out of our department get most of that credit for building this department. The previous chiefs, I always got to listen to them talk about how hard it was to get just one single new apparatus or one piece of equipment. And I made sure that they always get the credit because they always were thinking the same thing that I was thinking.
So you were at home, you had hung it up, you were retired, done. You can go golfing, go fishing, hunting, whatever, and then you were called back.
I was called back. Yeah, I sat at home. I was off for 2 months basically, and oh my gosh, it was boring. You can only watch so much TV. You can only play golf. My wife was ready to kill me because she's a school teacher, and I would literally go out and take a little camping chair and sit in the driveway and wait for her to come home because I was bored to death. And she's like, "Hey, you can't keep doing this. You need a job. Go get a job. Go find something to do. You just can't wait on me every day." So she was, wives always think that it would be nice to have their husbands at home in the fire service. They miss them that every third day until they retire. And then they figure out, hey, maybe it wasn't so bad you being away every third night. Not saying my wife doesn't love me, but I guess I was aggravating her being waiting on her in the driveway every day.
But this is kind of like it's more, it's not like it's more of a serious question because I do want to hear from your perspective. You were retired for 2 months. Was that transition difficult going from, I'm not sure what shift you worked, whether it was 24, 48,
It was 2448.
every third day. Was that like a culture shock to you? Like you are no longer working that schedule. Was it difficult to adjust?
Yes, it was. It was extremely difficult to adjust to. I don't know how to explain it, actually. It was just something that I wasn't accustomed to. Even on my days off from the fire department, right up until I retired, I had another job. I was an emergency management director for another county, a neighboring county. So I'd put 24 hours in at the fire department, and then I'd go work there at that neighboring county. So I was always gone. I was always on the move. There was no time to dilly-dally. You always had something in the cooker. You had to be constantly moving. And so that few that it was nice for about the first week. It was like, wow, it gave you time to decompress. I thought about, wow, what I've been missing this. Why didn't I take time to decompress or take time for myself, some self well-being? So I had a boat. I got to go to the lake. I'd take it out, go to the lake, and it was really good because my wife was out of school that first month I retired. So being there with her was fantastic. We got to spend a lot of time together. Like I said, decompress. And I thought, why was I beating my head against the wall all this time? And then when she went back to work, kind of switched. I didn't have that person. So I tried to call on the guys that were at the fire department still. And they were just busy. They were on shift. And I didn't want to go back and just look like I missed it terribly. So I
Right.
tried to stay away and learn to stay away. And yeah, it hurt some people. We might cover that later in the conversation, but something as a chief, I've not done a great job at it. And I know it's on the back of my mind. I'm just busy and I need to learn to make time for it. Is just had a young man call me on the phone today that just retired. He called and he says, "Chief, I hadn't talked to you since I retired. It's been about a month, and I need to do a better job of reaching out to some of those guys who leave the fire service and checking on your brother, making sure they're doing the transition." Now this gentleman, he's doing good. He says, "No, I'm doing great. I'm enjoying retirement. I've got another job. It's not a stressful situation." So some of those guys, though, this is all they've ever known.
Right.
So we need to reach out and make sure our brothers are doing good. I've had a few that, as a matter of fact, when I get off this call, I'm going to make time and I'm going to call some of them right now today. So if anything beneficial comes of this podcast, it's I'm going to do something I talk about and actually make time to do it. So yeah, it's difficult for guys. It really is, Danny. And we need to be aware of that in fire service.
Definitely, definitely. And like I said, that's what I wanted to ask you. So awesome, awesome. Okay, love the advice. I'm gonna switch it to, so you're the fire chief, and I know you said you had a list of things. I definitely want to hear it. And you titled it, I probably don't want to butcher it, but what you wish you knew when becoming fire chief.
Yeah, I've entitled it "Things I Wish I Knew Before Becoming Fire Chief."
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. If you got something else to say, go ahead and say it.
Nope, I was going to say, let it rip, send it.
I've been, being, like I said before, being a captain, it gave me a little bit of experience, but it didn't give me what a chief actually does. So, developing those skills, I wasn't even a battalion chief, so I didn't know what a battalion chief does. So, I had a little bit of experience. I learned from my battalion chief that I have. So when I was able to run the shift, it wasn't as hard for me. I felt like I had a pretty good grasp. But when you become the chief, it switches gears to a whole nother level. Not only do you have, if you're 24/48 like we are, not only do you have three different shifts, it's almost like having three different departments.
Right.
It's like this battalion chief does it a certain way, and this one does it a certain way. So you have to learn to bring it under that same umbrella. And the first year was a complete learning process. And after the first year, I thought, I talked to a previous chief and he had left me a little list and it said Chief 101.
Okay.
So I didn't get to learn from the previous chief. He did come back and give me some pointers and he left me a little paper. Not so just like this one actually. It said Chief 101. So it gave me some of his daily duties that he had to do, like pay the bills. Make sure to write reports, things of that nature. So after the first year of kind of learning on the fly, I thought, you know what? I need to write some of these things down that I have learned so far so I can pass it on to the next guy. One of my big things is that when becoming chief in my department, I wanted to make sure that we created a culture that it was not about yourself. It was about the guy behind you. And it's been really trying at times because, changing the culture in the department, it can be really tough. And I wanted to change the culture that we're going to make changes. You know how changes in the fire service, sometimes it's absolutely the most deplorable thing you could ever mention. Changes, everybody wants change until change comes. And then it's like, oh, what the hell was the chief thinking? I can't believe that we've done this for 20 damn years. Sorry, my life, pardon my life, but we've done this for 20 years and now the chief is going to change it. And these are the things I've heard. Hey, chief, we need to change this. We need to change this. So when you change it, then it becomes like, what was he thinking? I can't believe we asked for change, but we didn't want change. And, so I wrote this down. And I wanted to teach our department back to changing the culture. So changing the culture of our department was the number one thing. I've always wanted to make it better for the guys behind us. If we change some of these things, we're not necessarily going to reap the benefits. If we get the pay up for starting pay, that guy is not going to have to start out at the 425 that I did several years ago. So we're going to try to make sure the pay's better, the training program's better, the benefits are better, all the way from top to bottom. The equipment we work with is better. When I became the chief in this department, we had one set of extrication equipment, full one complete set, and then we had a combi tool, and they were lines. They were, hydraulic line sets, and I was like, we have one for the entire department. Why do we not have one on every apparatus? So those are the types of changes I'm talking about. Now, those are things that are immediately good for the guys that are here. But, changing the culture just to make sure that the training program is better, things like that, we may not get to reap the benefits, but it's going to make it better. And getting guys to understand that is really tough. So that made me think about putting these down. So number one, sorry, I sometimes I get off in the weeds a little bit there. So number one and understand I've got about 10 of these items, and number one is not necessarily the biggest one. That list constantly changes from day to day for me because so when I knew I was coming on your podcast, I tried to rank them, and immediately after I read through some of those, I was like, no, that needs to be up here because currently what's going on in the department dictates what number they are. So one of the key points is over investing in trust. So I'll read what I got and then I'll elaborate in my own words because, like I said, I'm trying to make this as a retirement speech for one day. So trust is the cornerstone of effective leadership, but it must be approached with caution and discernment. As a fire chief, it is crucial to build and maintain a network of reliable individuals who can support and assist in achieving the department's goals. However, overinvesting in trust in the wrong people can lead to significant setbacks. So when I became the chief, and I automatically thought everybody shared the same vision and the same goals of the department. So when I gave out a task, it was under the premise that they wanted exactly what I want. So I would invest in trust, and I don't like to micromanage people. That'll be another one of my points later I'll get into is the style of leadership has a lot to do with how your department, accepts task and how they do things. So I don't micromanage. So I give them a task and I think they're going to take this and they're going to run. They're going to charge through the gates of hell and slay the dragon and get all, do it exactly the way I want. And that's not always the case. And when it comes time to get those results or everything back, it's not exactly the way you planned for it. And sometimes it hurts you, especially if you needed this for when it comes to your elected officials, when you're doing a report or whatever, and you were expecting something, and then it came back to you and it wasn't exactly. So now I overinvested in trust. So now I've had to take my time and that I had set aside for something else. And now I need to complete the task on your own. So couple points along with that is make sure you're understanding the risks that are involved with that. Trusting someone implicitly without knowing their background in the subject or knowing exactly what they're capable of doing may backfire on you. One of the biggest things you could do, though, as the chief is build your support team. Get those people you can trust. I tell guys this all the time in officers' meetings and department meetings, is you do not have to be the smartest guy in the room, but you do have to surround yourselves with those people. I don't know everything about the fire service. Hell, I knew very little about being the chief, but I did know how to be an effective leader. And that's what I try to tell them is you don't have to know every subject. You don't have to be the training officer. You don't have to be the fire marshal. You don't need to know everything about everything in the fire service, but you need to find those subject matter experts and surround yourself within your department with those people and listen to them. Let their knowledge shine through. Don't overshadow them or don't downplay their role, but make sure you embrace it and build that support network that you have. Along with that, always be professionally skeptical. So don't it, what you know, a lot of people is like, what does that mean, Chief? Be professionally skeptical. Always have in the back of your mind that are they going to do exactly what you ask? Doesn't mean that you have to micromanage them or think that they're a terrible person and they're not going to do what you want them to, but be professional about it. But always have that little bit of skepticism and you won't over invest in the trust, if that makes sense. Number two, this is a big one. It is something that I thought I could do and I quickly learned that I cannot. You're not going to make everybody happy.
That's a big one. That's a big
I mean,
one.
it is huge. I thought everybody's gonna love me. Everybody's gonna, I'm gonna come in here with a 5-year plan. We're gonna get this. We're gonna grab the bull by the horns, and we're gonna take off running. And that doesn't mean everybody's gonna be happy about it. What I have wrote down here is while striving to make as many people happy as possible, happy through sound decision making is important. It's impossible to please everyone. Accepting that saying that accepting that saying no at times will sometimes get you some negative feedback, but that can also play a crucial role in moving forward. The focus should be on decisions that benefit the whole department. Recognizing the limits, not all decisions will be popular, and it's essential to understanding that some people are just unhappy. And for whatever reason, whether it's life at home, they're not happy with the career choice they made. Some people are just not always happy and smiling and happy to be there. So, but what you need to do is stay true to your core values and prioritize, even if it means facing criticism. I have trouble with this sometimes. I still try to make as many people happy. And I don't like criticism, but I have to catch myself every now and then. That's one of the reasons we didn't have an assistant chief in our department when I came. We didn't have that position. I created that position, and one of the reasons I hired my assistant chief is I hired a person that'll hold me to number two. He tells me every day, he says, "Chief, if it was easy, everybody would do it." And that's what I need from that guy. That goes along with building that sound support system. He doesn't agree with every decision I make. Even he doesn't. That's why I got him. I didn't want a yes man, and I wanted somebody that's gonna hold me true to understanding. Chief, you can't make everybody happy. And he tells me that on a daily basis. Sometimes I get mad at him. He tells me. And I'm like, damn it, stop that. I'll skip over, but let me find it. Now that I say that, it kind of leads me to this next one. It's not necessarily number three, but It's because I said so mentality. As a chief, God, I hated that. I hated that. Well, I mean, as a line officer, because I said so, I was like, I'll never be that guy. I'll never be that because I said so. Give your men a reason, damn it. Just don't say because I said so. When I became the chief, though, now I understand because I said so. Sometimes it's imperative. You have to be that way sometimes. It very rarely do it. I always like to give reasons why I'm going in this direction. I try to keep the department informed. And it goes back to when I do that, sometimes I receive criticism. So when you receive that criticism, and even though that you try to explain it to them, when you get to that point where explaining it no longer works, the BISS method becomes necessary because I said so. And that way, sometimes you can just leave it at that because I said so, go do your job and do it. And hopefully later down the road, they'll understand that mentality. I never understood it as a lieutenant or a captain. Hated that. It was just despised that because I said so. But it's truly a balancing act. You have to understand that decision making is valuable, but and they're not always going to be well received, but sometimes it's absolutely necessary. And when you do, be decisive with it. End it right there because I said so. I'll give you the re even though sometimes you can't always give them the reasons right then and there. And a lot of guys don't understand that. Some of my company officers don't understand that. I always tell them, hey, I know you don't understand it right now. Just try to trust me a little bit and I'll circle back to you and you'll understand why it was that way then. And I could not explain. Some of the guys, I've always tried to be transparent with our department, but some information has to remain with the chief. And some information is just pertinent to the chief and chief only. Some of my elected officials tell me things that I can't share with the rest of the department. And people within the department tell me things that personnel matters. I just can't share with them because it is personal. It may influence department policy. They're like, why the hell are we doing that? And I can't tell them exactly why it is because it was personal to this guy, but it's something that we have to do. Because I said so mentality just has to be there. For it's something that's big on me. Even as the chief, I've enjoyed my time here. Sometimes I forget the target myself. And this will tie in with another point is being the chief becomes you're a politician. Let me find that one real quick, Joe. Where is it? I got to find which number it currently is because it changes from time to time. I'll just ad lib this. The chief is not an elected position in my community. But here it is. Navigating bureaucratic and political pressures. The chief is a political figure. And I tell people this when I became the chief is there's no room for politics in being the chief. Emergency service should not worry about what political line it's crossing. At no point should it ever be that way. But as the chief of a department, it becomes very important to know, political pressures and bureaucracy sometimes play a role in being the chief. I put bureaucratic and political pressures can significantly impact the role. Understanding how to navigate these pressures, build relationships with stakeholders, and advocate for the department's needs is crucial for the success and department well-being. That's, whether my political affiliation, I have to learn to cross those party lines. So, managing those pressures and another balancing act Sometimes you may not always get what you want, but you have to learn when a no is sufficient and when to push back.
Right.
So, you have to weigh, do I want this or do I want this more? Do I lose on this topic to win this one? It is, really important, and that's something I had to learn. So when you're learning that, forgetting the target is something that happens when I do that. Sometimes the bureaucracy makes me forget my goal here is I'm an alpha personality. I want to be right. I want to be right all the time. And sometimes when I go in to talk with those that governing body, no, I'm the fire chief. I know what's best for my department. I'm not losing. I'm going to fight to the bitter end with, some of those politicians because I know what's best for my department because I'm the fire chief and I said so. And I lose sight of the target. Now, chief, is that really the mountain you want to die on? Because it was actually just a molehill. So you can't lose sight of the big picture. Always make sure you know what the end goal is, and that's really critical. I forget that from time to time. My assistant chief kind of pulls me back in, chief. Now wait, this remember you told me this was the end goal, and this is what we want to go for. So does it really matter if we lose this topic or this subject? No, you're right, chief. All right, we're back to it. So don't forget the target. Naturally, I got underestimating the importance of communications. That's everything in life. Every after action report that you come up with always says communications was could have been better. So I felt the need to make sure you include that. Clear and consistent communications is critical. Effective communication, expectation, changes, and feedbacks help prevent confusion and frustration, making it essential to prioritize open and transparent dialogue. We could spend the whole hour on this, so I'll move on to other ones. I touched on it earlier. Misjudging the impact of leadership style. I never knew how important this one would be because I always thought to myself, when I come into this department and I decide, this is the way I'm going to lead. I'm going to lead in this manner, in this manner only. I'm going to make sure that everyone has a say so. Everyone's opinion is valued. Down to the man at the bottom. And that was kind of my leadership style, more of a democratic, not an autocratic. I've worked for some autocratic chiefs in this way, hell with it. Nobody else gets to say so. It's because I said so. And, autocratic leadership, whatever your leadership style is, you're going to develop that, and the culture of your department will become that as well. When I first come to, some of the chiefs I had were just autocratic, and that department became autocratic, and that's why I left. It was that way and that way only, and only their opinion mattered. They didn't listen necessarily all the way through the ranks, and I didn't like that leadership style. So I felt like I needed to be a little bit more, democratic or transformation. Those are the two leadership styles that I tried to develop here within our department. And it feels like that it's being well received and the culture is changing because of that. Sometimes you have to be autocratic, but I don't like that. So, and I learned that really early, that that leadership style is really how it's going to move your department forward. I have another chief in my department, or he was a previous chief with another department, and he works in our department. And he always tries to give me pointers and helps me out. And sometimes I'm not always receptive to it. I'm like, I've got to do it my way. I've got to find my own way. And I always have to come back and go, you know, it's probably not the best. He's actually lived through that. So probably ought to listen and take
Right.
his. He's just trying to help. He's not trying to undermine or circumvent me as being chief. He just wants to help me, genuinely help me. So I always remind myself of that too. Another one I've got here is forgetting to continuously size up the organization. So that kind of goes back to, you know, forgetting the target. You got to take time to make sure you're constantly making sure your department is where you want it to be. I forget that from time to time. I think we've already been there. We're way past that. I don't have to go back to it. That's not the case. Sometimes you kind of remember the fire service is based on hundreds of years of tradition. Some of them good, some of them not so good. So you tend to fall back into that traditional means. And so always size up your department. What I got here is keeping a consistent pulse on the department's culture and understanding perspectives from all levels is important. Regular engagement with the team and assessment of their experiences can help address issues and align the department with its goals. So always don't forget to constantly assess your department. Very important. And I'll wrap it up with another one is I touched on it earlier, is overlooking the need for self-care. Who never knew how stressful the chief's job was until you become the chief.
Right.
As firemen, we never understand that. You know, I hear a lot of times, boy, the chief's got the best damn job in the department. He shows up, he comes in the morning when he wants, he goes home when he wants. You know, that's how people view it. See me walk in the door and walk out that door certain times, they think I'm gone and it's it for the day. They don't realize that I, you know, even when I walk out that office door, I would catch myself being here at 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, show up 0600 in the morning, an hour before shift change began, and, you know, just to make sure I had everything in line for the day in case that battalion chief walked through the door with questions. You know, guys don't necessarily see that. So they think it's just, oh, chief can do whatever the heck he wants. And it's not the case. So when I go home in the evening, I'd stay here to 5, 6 a night. My wife, I'd go home, I'd eat supper with her. I'd get right back on the laptop and work for another 2 to 3 hours right before I go get into bed. And then when I get into bed, you know, the wife and I would talk about how her day was. And then I'd go back, grab the laptop, and think to myself, I forgot something. So I'd start working on it. It's a terrible way to be the chief. You have to make time for, you know, self-care. The demands on being the fire chief can be intense and personal, and well-being might be neglected. I can tell you it is, it's neglected. Managing stress and setting boundaries and finding time to recharge are vital to maintain effectiveness and resilience. Oh, like me getting this fire station and just putting it online. I got a ribbon cutting ceremony coming up in the weeks in a few weeks down the road here. And as soon as it's over, I'm going to take my own advice and take a little break. I'm going to try to recharge for the next big one because I'm actually working on a fourth station. So you know, then my wife, she laughs. She goes, that's what you need. You haven't even accomplished that station and finished it, and you're already working on getting number four. And I was like, well, honey, that's what I do. You know, it's tough. That's the life of a fire chief. So make sure that as chiefs of your department, make sure you take time for yourself and your family, because it will help you when you come back to as the fire chief to your department, and it helps with those issues. I sit down all the time. I have an open door policy. So the guys that come in, as long as it's not department related, my door is open all the time. And I found out as the fire chief that I have to be a father. Sometimes I have to be a brother. Sometimes, I have to be a number of things. I have to be a marriage counselor, a financial counselor, all these things that I did not think I would be doing as the fire chief, you become. If you want to be an effective chief, you have to learn to help navigate young men through financial times or marital problems, things of that nature. It's really tough. And those begin to weigh on you too, because there are problems. Sometimes I chief, I need a place to live. My lease isn't being renewed. And, I worry about that family being out on the street. This is one of my men. So all their problems become your
Your
problem.
problems. Yep.
They do. And that's just the type of leader I am. And, sometimes guys say, why do you worry about that? That's chief, they got themselves into that. And to be an effective leader, I have to care about their problems. So their problems become my problems. And sometimes it gets to be too much and it weighs me down. So I got to learn to take a little bit more time for myself. I hope other chiefs take that into consideration as well. You being there for them all the time is a great thing, but you have to take time for yourself sometimes so
Definitely.
you can be a better effective leader for them when it comes. So, like I said, that's pretty much my list for right now. I got a few other points, but it's an ever evolving list. If I stay another 2 to 3 years, this list may have to be cut down because I'm entitled to five things I needed to know, and now I'm at 10 a year later. So the list is ever growing, and that's what I got for being the chief, Danny. If you got any more questions, feel free to ask. But that's what I really wanted to come on here and talk about is knowing. Hopefully, my time as being the chief, me giving this feedback and creating this list, I can help future chiefs of departments. If they already know those things, fantastic. They're way ahead of the game. They're further along than what I was. And hopefully I can help those guys out.
Well, no, I mean it's definitely something, I appreciate you doing because even myself, and during my earlier years, like you saw the fire chiefs come in. Like I was stationed at headquarters. So like you'd see them come in, you'd do everything. Like it's like a switch would flip and you become a different person. Like, okay, chief's here. All right. Like staying good. Morning, chief. How are you, sir? Blah, blah, blah. Can I wash your car? Whatever that, but the things are, as you get older and your department gets bigger, people tend to think, well, all he does is go to meetings and sits in his office, and he may run a big incident here or there, but it's more to it. Like, the meetings, the fact that one of the biggest things is there are so many chiefs out there that actually fight for their organization, and the membership doesn't know because he doesn't let the battle be known. You know what I mean? Like
Absolutely.
he or she harvests that to themselves or to their to his command staff, like, I just got my ass chewed for whatever the case may be, but we don't know that because they're good at deflecting that.
Right, exactly. You're 100% correct on that. When I was just a line officer, just a firefighter, I never knew what the chief was going on behind closed doors. Some of the chiefs may have not been doing those things,
Right.
and I may have been correct in that assumption, but I did not know. And I want guys to understand that too, that I try to fight for them. And sometimes you got to pick and choose your battles, which, it's not all, like I said, it may not be 100% across the board, make everybody happy, but I'm going to do the best I can for the majority of the department. You're absolutely right. They don't see what the chief always does behind closed doors. And you know, I get beat up from time to time from my boss, you know, or my governing body. But that's the give and take about the job. That's learning to be the politician, like I was talking, or the bureaucrat.
Right.
You know, it just that way.
Right. One question I do have for you. What are your expectations or your standards for your organization, especially for the personnel that work in your organization?
To ask the question again, I'm sorry, cut out.
What are pretty much your standards for personnel working in your organization? Because you know every chief has a standard that they
Right.
want their personnel to, you know, always meet.
The standard I have is come, do your job well, and make sure that everyone else goes home. Everything else will take care of itself. That's the standard I have. Is like I said, not everything is always going to be peaches and cream. You know, home life may not be great, but when you walk through that door out there, make sure that your attitude is going to reflect a positive outcome on our community. If you do that, you'll find yourself smiling throughout the day, and it'll make you feel better about yourself, and you'll do better in the job. Our number one commitment and priority is our community. So that's the standard. Make sure that you come in, serve your community to the best of your ability every day. Doesn't mean that you got to be happy about it. Doesn't mean that you're going to always give 110%, but don't cheat the public. You wouldn't want them cheating you, so don't cheat them. That's the standard I try to teach, and that's the culture I'm trying to cultivate here, is always come through the door and do your best. Make sure that you're giving 110%. Doesn't mean everybody's happy. Now, you know what it's like in the fire service. You know, you sit down at that dinner table. Some of the best training and best conversations revolve around that dinner table. But you know what? I've seen some of the biggest fights too around that dinner table as well. So, you know, that's just what I'm trying to tell everybody, is make sure that you're trying to do your best all the time. And that'll limit it. You know, those fights around that dinner table will limit themselves. You know, not saying they're not always inevitable, but
Right.
that's just the way it is. That's the way it is with family. You know, if you're always smiling, everything's happy, that's not family. We
Right.
know that. You fight with family, you argue with family. I don't mean literally fist fight, although, you know, sometimes in the firehouse, I've come across those too sometimes. And I'm not condoning violence at the very least. I'm just saying that we've seen those things within the fire service. And we got to understand that it is a family. It's not always happy. It's not always great. But we love each other and we care about each other. And that's what we have to foster, is making sure that we come in and give 110%.
100% correct. 100% correct. And one of the things I love that you mentioned, because I'm sure with the amount of years that you have in the fire service, you've seen it. Like, I'm sure back in the day, it was shut up and do what you were told, because it was for me. And
Oh,
then
yeah.
now it's no, let's, if they don't know, let's show them. But also, especially with you being the fire chief, you got to make sure that your members are okay. And when I mean okay, not just their performance on the fire ground and in the firehouse, but okay within themselves and home life.
Right. You know, I have seen a lot. I'll tell you a quick story. I had a lieutenant when I first got in the fire service that, you know, as a punishment, I would scrub the undercarriage of the engine with with a toothbrush and kerosene. And I was like, why in the hell am I doing this? And there wasn't any end goal in it. It was just because you're going to learn to do as I say. And I'm like, I quickly learned that lesson. You know, I'm going to do those things. But yeah, I've seen a lot over my career. Some of them good, some of them not so good. But wouldn't trade it for all the money in the world. It's been fantastic.
Definitely. Okay. And my last question for you, how long do you see yourself going before you actually go, all right, I'm done. I'm going home and I'm not coming back?
Honestly, probably shouldn't tell this one on myself, but when I came in as the chief, I had a 4-year plan, and or actually a 5-year plan. I've accomplished everything on that list in about 3 years, 10 months. And I kind of want to be done now, but the new group of guys and the younger generation that I'm starting to see come into the fire service has got me reinvigorated about it. And I want to be there for them a little longer. I went through, yesterday was 9/11, went through the largest promotion ceremony I've ever had. I promoted 5 new lieutenants at one time. And I tied it in with, when FDNY had their largest battlefield promotion ceremony after 9/11, they had 166. So I kind of tied it in with that. So that in itself has kind of reinvigorated me. I've accomplished something. I've got an officer corps now that is fantastic. I don't want to leave just yet. So now with Station 4, I'm trying to get it online. So I'm probably thinking maybe be another 2 years, hopefully. I
Okay.
got another 2 years. My wife has 2 years till she could retire as a teacher. So I'm trying to hold out the same amount of time. Now, if I stay beyond that, we'll just have to take it day by day and see. But I think I got about 2 more years left in me.
Okay. All right. I mean, that's really good though that you had a goal in mind, you set a goal for yourself and you surpassed that, which I'm not saying like it was all on you because, a lot of successful chiefs also thank their crew, their command staff, because, they realize it's not just you. But the fact
Right.
is, though, you have a vision. And I think where some, whether you're trying to be captain, lieutenant, or a chief officer, I think where you fall short is, or some of them fall short by not having that vision.
I agree with you. If I may elaborate on that just a little bit, when I first come into, I told him, I said, I'm probably only going to be here set number of years. Once I hit my accomplishments, I'm out, because I wanted them to understand. I want other guys to have an opportunity to see their visions through. I've worked under that fire chief that's been there 15, 20 years. And I'm not saying those departments are stagnant, but, unless you're reevaluating consistently, those departments are going to become stagnant, because the vision's always the same for 20
Right.
years. Excuse me. So I want other guys to have that ability to become the chief of this department. And, I don't want to overstay my means. Another thing that I thought I would be a good chief, because I did retire and came back. Chiefs sometimes that are need to get a certain amount of time in for their retirement are subservient to the governing bodies. They have to have their job. And when they become the chief, they have the intentions of fighting for their men, but they're also very vulnerable. They may be dismissed, or they may be let go, and they need that little bit of time to make their retirement. So they may back off from a situation that they would otherwise, thrust headlong into. And so, me being the chief, I had already retired. I felt like I had that capability. I think that's why my alpha personality shines through too often, is I want to be right on every point, because I don't care. What are they going to do? Fire me? That's what they're going to do. Fire me. My check comes in the mail every,
Right.
my retirement check is always there. It's not a good attitude to have, but that was the attitude I came in with. I don't have to worry about proving my point or being that guy for my department. I can always fight to the bitter end. And sometimes that's a good thing, but it's not always the way you need to be. So being that chief that's here 5, 6 years is about the limit. I want guys to understand they'll have an opportunity to become the chief too. If my aspirations as a fireman is to become the chief of the department, and I tell you I'm going to be here for the next 30 years or until I die, I'm probably going to look for another department to go with
Right.
because I know I'm never going to be the chief of that department. So I think it's important for me to set a time limit too. Is, some guys tell me, "Chief, when you're gone, I'm gone." I'm like, "No, don't let it be that way. It's okay. Well, I'll make sure that we do our best to get the next guy will move the department forward. So let that be you." That's what I tell them. Let that guy be you. So don't leave. Be that guy. Don't worry. You'll eventually get your shot too. So I'm trying to cultivate that culture as well. Be the chief 5 to 6 years. Let somebody else go. Now, if you got a plan and you're moving forward, if you want to be there 10 years, be there 10 years. But don't become stagnant. Don't let the vision, don't lose sight of the target. One of those points, don't lose sight of the target. Make sure that you're constantly moving forward.
No, you're 100% right. And I think some forget that. They forget the sight of the target, the loss of their vision. And unfortunately, it happens to the best of us. They become stagnant. And
Right.
when you surround yourself with yes men, that won't tell you that. And it's just a perpetuating cycle until you finally decide to hang it up. So I 100% get your
It
point.
is. It sure is.
Chief, I really do appreciate you coming on, taking your time out of your day to do this. I have to give a shout out to Lincoln Arnold. Do you know Lincoln
I know
personally?
Lincoln Arnold. He's the
Okay.
one that got me into this predicament.
He did. So Lincoln, I want to say thank you very much. Chief, now, like I said, like before we started, I love talking to fire chiefs because, yes, you're a political figurehead, but I think fire chiefs need to be heard too. The ones that are progressing their department, trying to be better, trying to make their men and women accountable and, making them better. Your message needs to be heard. And I truly appreciate you taking your time to do this.
Well, I hope I've been able to convey that. I'm just a small town fire chief that in rural Kentucky, but hopefully that message will help somebody else in a different state or wherever it needs to be to take some of those points and become a better chief themselves.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Continue doing what you're doing. I look forward to seeing some progress, sir.
Thank you, sir. Check in it. Feel free to check in anytime with us and we'll see where we've made it in a couple of months or so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Danny. You have a great day, sir.
You too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.